This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to Twin Peaks Investing. This is the podcast brought to you by Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conquest3 on Twitter, and my good friend Peter at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter. How are you doing, Pete?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad. It's been quite an eventful period since we last spoke, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we said a few things on podcast number 35. With regards, there going to be more takeovers. With regards to the markets, could have a bit of a push, and both of those things happened. You know, we said we may not have the result of the U.S. elections. We've had a result in some sense, but not confirmed by certain parties, and we don't want to get into that, Pete, unfortunately. Some people have confirmed who the winner is of the U.S. elections. Other people haven't as yet. It's going to be interesting. Couple of weeks ahead, but the markets have rejoiced because we've had some nice COVID-19 vaccine news. One from Moderna first, and then we had one from Pfizer, BioNTech this week. Yeah. So the markets have had a feel good factor, and lots of stocks have rallied as a consequence of that. Even the transport ones and the you know, Carnival Cruises and so on and so forth. We'll talk about them a bit later on. But it's been a very, very interesting 2 weeks, Pete, since our last podcast for certain, and lots of people rejoicing because their portfolios have risen significantly in certain cases.
Oh yeah, mate. I mean, I think the vast majority of people have done really well out of it. But it's funny because you were saying before that, you know, you know what we discussed on TPI 35 and how the markets had a good rally, and we sort of, you know, hinted that. But I think it's important to say that I think if I remember what I said in TPI 35, I was sort of saying if it does this, as in drops below 5.6 or whatever it was, then it's probably going to fall further. If it gets above this, then it's probably going to go higher. And as it happens, I mean, was it last Monday, wasn't it? Last Monday when the vaccine news came out. And obviously that was like the day after, you know, the weekend of the presidential election as well, which may have had a bearing, who knows. But the jump was remarkable. I mean, it was like 5% or more on the FTSE 100 in one day. I mean, these are just monumental moves. And I hate to use the word because it's awful. Game changer, that's what it was, I think.
Well, I think the thing is, Pete, is that once people get a sort of idea that actually there's light at the end of the tunnel, we feel like we've been in the tunnel, Pete, since February, March.
Forever, yeah.
Markets completely capitulated. There was a picture that somebody put up on Twitter, and it showed the March 23rd US markets, and it was all red. Apple, Google, Amazon, everything red apart from one tiny little stock. And you know, everyone seems to have forgotten March 23rd, you know, when their portfolios were down, you know, having had a couple of weeks of being hit it some more down so significantly. And we went sub 5,000 in March, April time, and now, you know, we were struggling only, you know, a couple of days after you had the podcast and you said, you know, 5771 was your monumental figure, and you absolutely smashed it and nailed it on that.
Yeah.
And once that went down, it was a case of, whew, we have to watch this next level here now. Otherwise, we could indeed go down another 500 points lower. But then we had the news regarding the U.S. elections. Then we had the COVID-19 vaccine from Moderna, and all of a sudden, you know, having gone from 5771 down to, I think it was 5550, so 5550. The markets then had that really good news and started to lift again, and nobody wanted to believe it at first. Did you realize that, Pete? You remember that day when it started moving up? But that was the news that people needed. And he's like, you know what? We could get out of this, you know, next year. We could start going back to work. We could start, you know, reinvesting. We could start taking money off the sides. And the market went up from 5,550 to a high on the 16th of 6,440. Right,
it's such a huge move.
So that's 900 points for a foot for the FTSE that barely could hardly get out of its own socks in the morning, you know. So
incredible rally. The thing I noticed on the Monday morning was how, first thing after the news of the Biden win, there wasn't really that much reaction. I think the FTSE 100 was up about 1% at 9 o'clock or 9:30, whatever. And then it was round just before midday where it suddenly, obviously, the vaccine news came out and it just jumped. And that so it sort of makes me think from what happened then that the vaccine really was the big bit of good news, and the presidential election probably didn't hurt.
Didn't hurt. I mean, you've had three bites of the cherry. You've had the US elections, which is out of the way. That's one level of uncertainty that people needed to get out of the way. And then, you know, you had some positive news, and you had two bites of that positive news, you know, first from Moderna and then from Pfizer. So the market's had a really, really good push. But I, as I say, with all these things, you know, nobody wanted to buy the market at 5,550, you know, and then everybody wants to buy it at 6,000. Everybody wants to buy it at 6,400. You can have some stocks that get ahead of themselves, if you know what I mean, get overstretched, overbought, same as we had them, you know, oversold at the opposite end. So it's about tempering that sometimes and not getting carried away because that stock's gone up and going up, to then jump on it, because you could end up being the person that's the last one buying. And then when it starts to roll over, because, you know, some stocks have also got traders in it, and that's what, you know, sometimes caps movements on that on stocks. And that's why I say to you very, very often on this podcast, I prefer for my stocks not to have anybody in them or anybody talking about them or anybody buying them.
That's completely off the radar.
Once traders get into a stock, the stock goes up and it goes up, and you're like, oh yeah, great, it's moved that target, it's hit that target. Then the traders pull out, or invariably start to think, oh, this is overstretched. And because they're traders, they start shorting the stock, and all of a sudden the stock that was up for you is now at break even, and now minus 5%, now minus 10%. And there's nothing wrong with the story, it's just that traders have emerged in your stock.
Well, it's interesting what you're saying there about overbought. I mean, I think that's an important thing to realise at the time that we're speaking. I mean, we're talking on Wednesday night, the 18th of November. It's about, 6 o'clock or something. So it's after the market is shut. And, you know, what's really clear is, certainly at the index level, FTSE 100, FTSE 250, FTSE 350, AIM, everything, they're all very, very overbought. And individual stock level, very overbought as well. And what I mean by that is, you look at the charts and they've just gone vertical. I mean, when a chart goes vertical, especially if you use candlesticks, I mean, you can see it with a normal line chart, but if you use candlestick charting, you just see all these up candles. It must be like some stocks have got, say, 7 or 8 up candles on the trot of different sizes or whatever. But when you're getting those kind of moves, it's unnatural. It can't be sustained. So what tends to happen, if the mood has really changed, which I think it has, then what you get is this big jump, and then you get the sideways consolidation. And the sideways consolidation unwinds that overbought situation. And the easiest way to measure overbought, if you can't get the concept, is look at the daily relative strength index, the RSI. And, you know, all of those at the moment are like up at 70, 73, whatever. Anything over 70 is overbought. So what needs to happen is either the price needs to fall, and I doubt that's going to happen much, or we need time to drop those overbought RSI readings, which basically means just going sideways for a while. And I think that's what we're seeing. You look at the action the last few days, most markets have just gone sideways for the last few days. But that's a good thing, because that is unwinding the overbought position.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to touch on a few stocks that have just been absolutely on a tear, Pete. I only have to give you the ticker symbols just to you understand why, regarding COVID, why that has done it. And I've done this up until Friday's close. So the 7 days up to Friday. So one week of the stocks moving. And you've got IAG, which is the International Consolidated Airlines, on Friday, that was
British Airways, isn't it?
British Airways, essentially, up 39%, Pete, we spoke about Rolls-Royce, because obviously that's linked to the airlines and other engineering, etc. That was up 37%. British Land property, so people are going to go back into the offices, hopefully, and they're going to let more of their property back out, up 27%. Lloyds, a bank, because, you know, people are going to be able to go back and probably be able to earn more with the COVID being, you know, subsiding and being dealt with by the vaccine.
And they'll have less bad debts. And
they'll have less bad debts, exactly. That was up 26%, nearly 27% in 5 days. Land securities, again, property, 26%. Legal and general, 23%, nearly 24%. Informa, which is events and media events and so on and so forth, that was up 22%, nearly 23%. Compass, with all their services that they do, was up 21%, nearly 22%. BT was up nearly 22%. Coca-Cola, not sure why. Coca-Cola, the HBC one, you know, the one that around Europe. And
Hellenic bottlers, yeah.
Yeah, the bottling one.
That was like Greece and somewhere.
Yeah, they're all over the place. That was up to...
Tourism, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's tourism, yeah. It's like as more tourists go out, they drink more Coke.
Absolutely. And even your one, Pete, and the little tiddler one, Hostel World.
HSW, that's been mega.
That was up 54% up to Friday. Stagecoach, you know, all the buzzes back on the run in America and the US, hopefully in time. That was up 50%. Yeah. The loans company, I'll be talking about another loans company in a minute. Amigo Holdings up 50%. Restaurant Group, which has been absolutely battered, was up 49%. Gym, going back to the gym, the gym group,
GYN. Was up
45%. Bowl, which people have been in, out of that stock. Hollywood Bowl. Was up 42%. Another property company, Capital and Regional, was up 42%. Premier Oil had some good news. They were up 39%. Even Sundry, which is, you know, the fashion company, retailer, was up 39%. So loads of stocks really had a real big
pop. Which one? Superdry was that?
Superdry was up to Friday, 39%.
EasyJet. Yeah, I hold that, so yeah.
Yeah, EasyJet, 38%. Rank, the bingo people, was up 37%. Cineworld was up 52%.
So
National Express 37. There's loads, Pete. Everyone just went pop, 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 pop. But you know what didn't move? All the stocks that were doing well prior to the elections, Pete, the ones that we've talked about that were the winners, none of them did as well. Because they'd done well over the past 6 months for a variety of different reasons. And people were going, oh, well, they're okay, but these are undervalued. And I hold these, so I'm either averaging down or I'm buying a new because of this new good news. Yeah, so none of those stocks you'd have seen being ramped anywhere, really. Yeah?
So
they were the ones that were being brought up until Friday.
What's your thinking on what will happen to those stocks that have done well for the last 6 months? Do you think they're going to drop quite a bit now, or do you think they'll grind sideways, or do you think there's still upside for them? And obviously we're talking about the NASDAQ here as well. What do you think of those?
I think if we focus on the UK companies, Pete.
Yeah.
I think the ones that have done well from the major, let's say the nadir of March / April, the ones that have done well, right, regardless of sectors that they're in, right, unless they've got phenomenal, we're ahead, we've exceeded, those sort of things in their trading updates and half yearly and full yearly between now and February. Yeah. I think they could just be pushed to the side because people have got money on the side and they're looking for where the bargains are at. And the people that are buying things right at the very, very top will find that, you know, if they're buying something and it's at 52-week high and it's been done well, it's up 50%, it's up 60%.
Hello?
Since I'm still here, mate. Yeah? Pete?
Sorry, I'm on, so 45 minutes in the middle of the call there.
Yeah, so if you've got a stock that's done exceptionally well from March to the end of October, yeah, I think your stocks won't do as well if we carry on this momentum regarding the undervalued stocks. There's far more undervalued stocks in the UK market than overvalued stocks. So people are going to rotate, Pete, to the lower valued stocks and the ones that have been left and ignored, You know, you've seen the insurance companies coming up. You've seen the banks coming up. You've seen oil stocks coming up. BP, Pete, Glasgow Welcome.
Yeah.
It was on its knees. Like, why was that so ignored? You know what I mean?
Well, that's interesting because I think you're right. I think we'll see, you know, like that list of stuff we read out earlier, I think we're going to see those kind of stocks continue to be pretty good. I mean, obviously, it will depend on individual cases, and you're going to get some that are still going to disappoint and whatever once they come out with news or whatever.
Absolutely. But you've got some stuff out there, Pete, that's on a PE of 10. Yeah? 10
yeah,
or less.
Loads.
Loads. Right? Then you've got something in a PE of 30, 35, 40 that's done exceptionally well. Yeah? And to come out with really, really good news. Now, I'm not saying it's overvalued or overpriced or whatever. I'm just saying it's had a good run. So if you've got that in your portfolio, you're going to carry on holding it. But you're going to have to deal with the ramifications of the fact that other stocks are now available, and then other stocks are getting this sunshine on them from the fact this vaccine thing is going to allow them to start operating in a better environment over the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months. Yeah, your environment's still been good for you. Yeah, but these other ones that have been ignored and are down 30, 40, 60, 70% from their previous 52-week high and now available. So some people are going to opt to buy some of those stocks. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking specifically as we're talking, I was thinking of Team 17 that I hold, which is obviously that gaming developer and stuff. And it's had an incredible run and it's not cheap, you know. But I sort of get the sense that I think it will, maybe worst case, it will grind sideways for the next 3 or 4 months or whatever. But I still think there's a fair chance it's going to do pretty well. So I'm not in a rush to go selling TM17. I mean, the simple fact is, I can't tell the future. But I know from what I can see is that TM17 seems a pretty well-run business. Gaming seems to be a pretty hot thing in general, and obviously it's had the benefits of lockdown. We get that, but I can't help thinking that that's a stock that'll do all right. So I'm not rushing to sell it. You know,
I think there's certain stocks that will continue to do well, Pete. And what you've had with TM17 is the fact you've also had a bid for Codemaster from Take Two. We were talking about there being more takeovers, and straight away there was one, two, three more. Yeah, and more besides that, and I think certain sectors are going to carry on doing well, not just because of that takeover, but because people will carry on gaming, right? It's just a case of, you know what, I'm going back to work, but I'm still going to come home in the evening and do this, yeah? People are having to go back to work now because certain companies want them in the office, you know? So that's going to carry on going. But I think there's certain companies, if they're in the strongest of niches, they'll still be okay. You know, somebody asked me about Games Workshop and asked me, why is that rolling over? And it's precisely because of what I've said. You know, it's had a really strong run, Pete. It was down at £36. It hit 121 just a couple of days ago, a few days back, or maybe a week back. And now, as this momentum and rotation has changed, I think it touched, 95 recently. So the people that were buying at 115 and 120 are going, oh, I've bought, you know, I'm not saying you bought at the top. I'm not saying you bought at the top. I'm saying at some point or other, all the buyers that are in there, are either going to take some profit, or it's like I've said before, it's attracted traders, Pete. There's nothing worse than a large group of traders jumping into a stock, which is normally an investor stock. They go in, they go out, they go in, they go out. And then you know what? They start shorting the stock. Yeah. So that's now going down. Where will it end up? I don't know. It's a good stock. It's going to probably exceed in its next announcements. Yeah. And therefore it'll get another pop. But in between there being no news, that share price could go anywhere.
See, that's interesting, because I would view GAW in the same way that I would view TM17. And in many ways, it's similar forces driving it, in that GAW is expanding into more things like licensing of games and stuff like that, you know, computer games and stuff. Yeah. But in a way, I think what differentiates them is that it's hard to argue that both of them are not quality businesses. They're both definitely quality businesses. They're real businesses with good histories of revenue growth, good history of profit growth, a clear future you can see for both of them. Do you know what I mean? It wouldn't be hard to imagine both those companies being a lot bigger in 5 years' time. It wouldn't be that big a shock if they were.
I completely agree with you, Pete.
And I guess what I'm saying is the differentiation I would make is with some of these, like, vaccine companies and stuff that are just a vaccine company, and they might be just like an AIM-listed vaccine company. There's no history of achievement in terms of revenue and profit and whatever. You know, so it's like they've developed their product and their product's great and whatever, you know, but actually commercializing it and making that into sales and profit and, you know, doing it in a way that's profitable and you actually got your cost far lower than your sales and things like that is another story. And whether they can make that transition from being a product development company into being a proper business, you know. And I think ones like that might find life harder.
They will definitely find it harder, Pete. And I completely agree with you. Games Workshop in 3 years, 5 years' time will not be the price that it is now. But the problem you've got is that traders are now in that stock.
Yeah.
Right. So it's going to fluctuate far more than it normally would do.
Yeah.
So a stock that was at 36 quid suddenly gets loads of people buying it at 100, 100 plus. Yeah. It gets then up to 121. And now it's rolled back a little bit. And people that bought in more recently between the ranges of 80 to 120 are going, oh, where's the stock going now? And because they're not being the stock long, they're not ardent investors in that stock. They're not conviction investors in that stock. And the minute it goes down 5-10%, they're out. Yeah.
Whereas they get scared and out they go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the people that watched it go from 70 down to 36 didn't worry. Some people didn't anyway. And they held it all the way to 36. And then they got rewarded all the way up to 121. The ones that are in there new haven't got that same level of conviction, Pete.
Totally, totally. So the other thing that I think is interesting is that I think I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast, I'm not sure. But, you know, the idea of sort of seasonal patterns that happen every year, yeah, where you tend to get a sell-off around March, April, sort of springtime, you know, and you tend to get a sell-off around autumn time. So it's like August, September, October, you get a sell-off. And then you get, you know, the good old Santa rally, which tends to be from something like 14th of December through to the 5th of January, you tend to get a strong rally. And the other good one is the house builders. So we talked about house builders on TPI 35, the last podcast. And I mean, they've had an incredible jump, which is exactly what we're saying in a way. But what's interesting there is that historically, with incredible reliability, in the first quarter of a calendar year, so we're talking January to March, house builders tend to go up. And it's an incredible record. It's like 23 years or something. And out of 23 years, there's only 2 years where they haven't done it.
That is, well, that you say, I mean, that's the almanac that I think I used to get as well, Pete, that gives you the seasonality regarding certain stocks.
Yeah.
But I think what's different this time round, Pete, is that there's a low interest environment. And the fact that they put this stamp holiday in as well, that's going to run till March. I suspect that, like everything else, that might get extended, because you might recall as
it
well.
Will.
We were talking about forever. I was saying, I hope that they extend the furlough. I hope they extend the furlough. And then right at the very end, he extended the furlough. So I think depending on what happens with trying to encourage people to buy houses and transact, that could be a very interesting development. And, you know, the significance of it is that lots of people have been trying to buy and sell houses during this furlough and during this lockdown situation. And the backlog now is impacting a couple of stocks in the sense of people can't actually get the conveyancing and the legal stuff done because there's such a backlog of events going on regarding that particular sector. And I hold a stock that's impacted by that, but it should do quite well because of the backlog.
Which one's that?
That's ULS Technology, Pete.
Does
the e-conveyancy. I've been in that stock for a little while from 46. It hasn't gone very... It's gone up, it's gone down, it's gone up, it's gone down. And today it's had a bit of a pop. It's back up at 60-odd pence today. But I think they should do quite well because they're trying to make everything go on online and make sure that everything can be done digitally rather than the person has to go out and do this and do that. They're trying to reduce, speed up the paperwork. You don't want to buy, you don't want to be selling a house now and not being able to move in till July, you know?
So it's interesting because what they're sort of doing, you know, like Purple Bricks, PURP. Purple Bricks is sort of all about online, you do it yourself, you buy the house yourself, and you do all the paperwork and stuff yourself, and it's all done online and whatever. In a way, what ULS is doing is sticking to the traditional estate agent model and whatever. But ULS are sort of providing the tool. It's picks and shovels, isn't it? They're providing the picks and shovels to help the estate agents process things more quickly, and the solicitors, isn't it, and stuff. So
Absolutely.
that's quite interesting when you view it that way, as opposed to Purple Bricks, which is, sort of had a bit of a questionable history. I mean, it seems to be doing better at the moment, but I'm really not sure what's going to happen to Purple Bricks.
Yeah, I mean the only issue with ULS, and I say the issue in a sense of they need to get through the backlog because each transaction, obviously, whether it be a mortgage or a conveyancy or whatever, they get paid on that. So if they don't get through this backlog, then they don't get paid. So you need to get through that. So hopefully they will. We'll find out in due course. But I've had that a little while. It's one of them slow sort of movers. I'm happy with it. Again, it's tech. If it's a tech related sort of thing, I'm always considering it, Pete. So
Yeah, we like it.
that's where I'm happy with that.
It's interesting because on the house builders, we talked about them last week and that. They've had a nice pop since we spoke about them, and obviously with the jump. I still think there's plenty of upside. I look at some of them and I think, well, you've jumped loads, but you're still battered compared to where you were, 9 months ago. And I think there's still a lot of upside in loads of them.
I agree, and I think the beauty about what they're, and I said this before regarding the insurance companies, is that they have a freedom to do whatever they want, Pete. So they've come out with really good news, right? And Crest was the one we were speaking about last time, Crest Nicholson.
Yes,
So they've come out with really good news, and then they said, you know what, we're going to reintroduce our dividend, or we're going to increase our dividend. The banks can't do that, right? They've been held hostage by the government saying, no, just hold on, just hold on. So the builders don't have that sort of restraint on them. So they come out with good news and they say, oh, we're doing this with a dividend. All of a sudden, boom, they're off, you know?
Oh, definitely. I think that looks good. The other one that's related to that is, I think, again, we've touched on it before, but commercial property is fascinating me at the moment. And I'll give you two examples that I've read in the last couple of days. That was SREI, which is the Schroders REIT or something, REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust, and MCKS, which is McKay Securities. Now, SREI, I think, is more of a traditional commercial property company. It's got a tiny bit of retail, I think, but it's also got plenty of offices and plenty of just other general property, warehouses and whatever. I think MCKS is more about warehouses with the odd bit of offices, and it's regional and stuff. But the interesting thing is both of those are, 40, 50% down on their NAVs, and decent dividends on them as well. Rent collection going up on both of them, and like at sort of 95% or something. I just think if we're coming into a non-COVID world where the vaccine helps solve all the worries and stuff, then I think these stocks are going to be so cheap.
Yeah, I mean this is one that a chap that I follow, we follow each other, we have conversations every now and then about stock. He loves his REITs. He loves the slow, methodical sort of research angle of these properties, and he likes to buy things at a discount. And he's very good at picking the ones that are going to be a bit more resilient. And invariably, he wants to be churning dividends consistently, weekly, monthly. So he's got this, and he's always talking about the NAV being at a discount. So a little bit of a shout out here for Mike Ridyard. His Twitter handle is
Oh, yeah,
Ridyard
Mike.
Mike. And Mike occasionally gives us some feedback as well on Twitter as to whether he likes or he's enjoyed our a podcast. He usually listens on a morning of his walk. And I think the last time he spoke, I think the nav was something of Reci. RECI is the ticker symbol for the stock you're speaking about, Pete, the REIT.
That's so. Real Estate Credit Investments, isn't it?
Yeah. So the last REIT was around, the last NAV was about 148, 150.
Yeah.
So that's not a bad discount. If the discount, so the price of that stock has been ebbing and flowing. It's absolutely got spanked back in March, but the discount has been narrowing ever since. And like you say, it's in certain sectors where, you know, they're getting their rents paid more and it's increasing and they're collecting more. It's the low for that. Let's just find it. It was sub 94 pence. Yeah. And it's 129 now. So you see how big the discount was when it was at 94 in comparison to 148, 150. It's at 129 now.
So it's not that big a discount, is it?
It's not a nice discount and it's paying a nice divvy. So, you know, for those that are looking for dividend and the fact that it's safe and it's secure, and not going to go out of business, that's not a bad one. But he's got loads, so you might want
that one. That RECI.
Yep.
If I understand right, that's like, I don't think it directly invests in property, does it? I think it invests in property bonds or something like that. I might be wrong, but need to have a look at that.
No, I think it definitely invests in commercial property, Pete.
Okay, now I thought it might be that it invests in commercial property bonds. So that's just something for people to understand. I mean, yeah. And that might explain the difference in the NAV discounts, because some of these other ones have got such big discounts in comparison.
No.
The interesting thing with the NAVs is that a lot of the NAVs have been dropping all through this year. So we're already talking about NAVs that could be a naturally low. So we then get a big discount to an unnaturally low NAV. So as things change and the NAVs start getting written up again, and we get those discounts closing, you could get quite a nice double whammy, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, I'm just looking at this and it says, Reci is slightly different in that it issues loans, bonds and securities focused on senior lending.
Yeah, I thought so.
Average loan to value. So you are right, Pete. I stand corrected. I do apologise.
That's cool. It's just the name, sort of like Credit Investor. I thought, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
Yeah.
The other ones that are interesting around, related to all this again, and they've had good results lately, is Brickability, BRCK.
Yeah, I've seen a few people talking about that. Is that one that does almost like the events when it's loads of bricks and it's almost like a Lego plaything sort of thing?
No, it's not. This one is, mate, it's good old-fashioned bricks. It's
You're going to tell me it's like Michelmersh in a minute. Is that what you're going to tell me?
It is.
I've never looked at it, Pete, so carry on.
You know those things called houses and they make them it's one of them. And there's another one, MSLH, Marshalls.
I'm all about Marshalls, yeah.
And that, you know, I think Marshalls is slightly different in that it does a bit of the sort of brick stuff, but it really does paving slabs and things.
Yeah.
If you think about it, if you build a house, you obviously need those red bricks to build the house, but you also need paving slabs and stuff, so you know, and tiles and God knows what else. So, but I thought, I read some results on those recently. I thought both of those, you know, look pretty good, and they're going to play into those same themes when these things recover. You know.
Okay. So how long has that been on the market then, Peter? Brickability.
Oh, not long.
Very ignorant. Oh, is that
probably
that's
a year.
My excuse then?
Probably
that's my excuse. It's only been around a year.
Yeah, mate. That's cool. I won't talk about how long Reci's been around, but anyway, let's go there, mate. something else I wanted to talk about, right? And I just wanted your views on it, really. Was the ideas of luck versus skill?
Oh, yeah.
And what I sort of thought was that I see it all over the place, and I see it with my own portfolio. I'm not being funny, but sometimes I'm just lucky. Sometimes I'm unlucky. But it's like, I look at it sometimes and I think, how much of what I achieve is really down to my own skill? And how much of what I achieve is actually luck? And I got a funny feeling that luck plays a much bigger part than we think. It's a scary thought, isn't it? If you start thinking down that, analysing your own performance and what you do, and it's like, I think we can influence our own luck by buying certain types of shares and screening out certain things and all the rest of it and being careful and diversifying and all the good stuff, yeah? But however you cut it, luck is an element.
I'm going to have to agree with you, Pete. It's definitely an element. You know, I mean, I put a tweet out a couple of days back, the Gary Player tweet, and essentially it's the case of the harder I work, the luckier
yes.
I get.
Yes.
But I say that in a sense of my thing is about, you know, we've got an array of stocks, Pete, out there, right? And we want to find a couple that do exceptionally well or just well for us. So if you've got a portfolio of 8 stocks or 28 stocks, or I know somebody that's got 400 stocks, right? And that's a bit too many, right?
You want
those stocks to do well. And if you filter that down and condense it down to the best of the best of the stocks that you could hold, you should end up with around 20 to 30, I think, right? Diversified across different sectors. Yeah, some people have more than that. Some people have it far, far more condensed than that. Far more concentrated, should I say. But you still need an element of luck, because if you've only got 7 or 8 stocks and 3 of them get hammered, all of a sudden, you know, the top 3 of your portfolio might equate to 35 to 50% of your portfolio. That's all the work that you've done for 1 year, 2 year or 3 years could be wiped out by those 3 stocks taking a bath. Yeah,
just like that. Yeah.
Equally, your top 3 of your 8 stocks do exceptionally well and are all up, and all of a sudden you've made hay in the space of 2 months, 3 months, or 6 months that you would never have done in the past 3 years. So it works. It swings both ways, Pete. You've got to have a tolerance level, and this is why I keep coming back to psychology. You've got to have that within your, you know, psyche that you can deal with the good and deal with the bad in equal measure. Yeah, which is why people diversify. And that's why some people, a bit like Mike Rediav, we spoke about before, that's why he buys funds. That's why he buys REITs, because it's a diversification of a diversification. Yeah,
yeah.
When you buy a stock, you're buying that one stock. And regardless of all the different services that it supplies or it gives to its clients, it's still a concentrated pocket of something, isn't it?
So well, it's a concentrated pocket of risk.
Yes, exactly.
That, you know,
which is why you need that element of luck. And look what's happened now, Pete, right? Some people have been sitting there going, oh my gosh, when is the market going to be kind to me, right? They've been watching the market absolutely beat them about the chops, right? From March, April, May, July. None of the stocks that they're holding, right, that are down 20, 30, 40% have really moved much, yeah? And then all of a sudden, in the last 3 weeks... Right, since the US elections and the 2 vaccines coming out, some of the stocks that we talked about now have gone whoosh. The people that were sat in Lloyd's thinking that it would never happen again, right, are suddenly thinking, oh, thank heavens for that. British Land, whoosh, well up. BT, well up. Yeah? Train line, Pete. I mean, who's going to run back on the trains in the next 2 weeks? Nobody, right? It's up 38%, Pete, up until Friday.
I mean, shocking, that is, yeah.
So this is what I'm saying. There were people in that stock that hadn't sold it, Pete.
Yeah. Well, it's like me with Hostel World, HSW. I've ridden it all the way to the bottom. And, you know, I'm lucky that it's bouncing now, but it might not have, you know, it could have gone the other way. So
absolutely. But this is the thing we've spoken about before. If you have a conviction in a stock, right, and you've got cash on the sides and it's down here at the bottom, right, and you've got conviction to hold it, and you're still holding it, and you're still holding it, you're still holding it, and nothing's happening. If you truly believe in that stock, right, I would advocate for you to consider adding something down there at the bottom, because if it's there at a if you've held it from a pound and it's down at 30 pence now and it hasn't budged, if that story has not changed, yeah, other than COVID impacting it,
yeah,
then why aren't you buying it? If you believed in it at a pound and it's available for you now at 30 pence or 40 pence, Why are you not buying it now? If you've got the cash, why aren't you buying it now?
Well, that's a good point, if you've got the cash, because that's the other thing is, yeah, when you've got restrained resources, you've got your cash, you've got to look across your portfolio and think, where is the best place for me to put the cash?
Absolutely.
And do you know what? That's funny, because, again, luck comes into that. You know, you might have a bit of luck and happen to pick the one stock to average down on that then next week has a takeover. And that's the way it can go sometimes.
Pete, if we're talking about Horizon Discovery, for me, that was just luck. I picked it, I bought it, I did my research on it, yeah, all fine and fair enough. But I was not expecting anything to happen with that stock for 12 months, and I was happy to sit and wait and see things transpire. When someone comes and makes a bid at 180% higher, that is just extreme luck.
Do you know, it's funny, because I've got an example there of good luck and bad luck in a similar situation. And that was EU Supply, EUSP, that I held some time ago. I bought it because I really understood the sector well, you know, what it did really well and whatever, because it was related to my last job at Fujitsu. And I bought it thinking this could be good. It was a very small company. I didn't put a huge amount in it. And I sat on it a while, and it went up and it went down and whatever, you know, didn't really do much. And then it gets a takeover bid. So it's like, oh, I've been lucky, because it's got a takeover bid. But at the same time, I was incredibly unlucky, because the takeover bid was only like 15% higher than what I'd pay for the damn thing. So I felt that it was taken out way, way cheaper than what I think it was worth. And I was, you know, so I was lucky, but I was unlucky. And
similar sort of thing I fear is going to be happening to TalkTalk, which I hold, and it's got a bid on that particular situation right now. It's what I call a take under, Pete, not a take
exactly
under.
Yeah,
you know, you feel robbed, really, because you know that the other people are going to get the value of that. You talked about Tellit last time, you know, the 5G now is kicking in, Internet of Things is kicking in, AI is kicking in.
Who's
going to get a benefit
of
Tellit? You've endured all that pain, someone else is going to get a benefit of that now going forward.
Yeah, it's funny as well, because I think on EUSP, because I understood it so well, it sort of peed me off that I'd put so much time and effort into researching it. Because it was very small, I didn't want to take any risk with it unless I was really sure, you know. Yeah. And I think, in a way, that grated with me. Mate, on the luck and skill thing again, right, one thing that struck me is that this has been a really unusual year. I have never known in 20-odd plus years of investing, I have never known an almighty crash of the scale we had and the complete collapse in the markets faster than anything I'd experienced before, even 2008-09. I have never known the markets to then recover in, 7 months or 6 months, whatever it is, to recover and be higher. Well, not necessarily the markets, because obviously not all indexes have done that. But like my portfolio to be in the money nicely after that ridiculous collapse back then. And I think, I'm not being funny, there's a lot of luck to that. It could have been very different outcome.
There's a lot of luck, and you're absolutely spot on. That's the fastest recovery, V-shaped recovery we've had. And you've seen the US, some of the US markets hit new highs since that nadir of March, April time. You know, the UK market hasn't done that yet. Whether it will do in the next 4 or 5 weeks before the end of the year, I don't know. But, you know, we could hope. And, you know, I think what comes out in the next couple of days or weeks or so regarding the Brexit deal could be another positive or negative on the market. Another positive or negative could be when or if, you know, we can confirm that Biden's won. Everyone confirms that Biden's won. So that could be another one. If we get another vaccine from somebody else saying, oh, cracker, there's a third one here, that could be another one. So who knows, Pete? But you know what? The beauty of the markets is that it's the fundamentals of investing is that we are investing in an area, an arena of uncertainty. It's something we have to get used to. You're buying something, having done research on it, in the hope that your research says that this stock is going up. And you've got to remember, every single time that you're buying something, someone else thinks they're doing the right thing by selling it. That's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're saying that everybody else is wrong that's selling that stock for you to be buying it.
Yeah. That's so true. I mean, to be fair, some of the other people selling it could be, for instance, traders, so they've got a slightly different agenda.
Of course, of course.
And some could be like just downweighting their positions, but they still like the stock. So
absolutely,
it is complicated, mate. Something I was going to mention. I absolutely love Gold Rush. You know this program on Discovery.
You mentioned that program so many times on this podcast, mate.
Mate, yeah. This is becoming the Gold Rush appreciation podcast. It's on Discovery Channel. I absolutely love it because it's just got these crazy people who go and think they can become mega miners in like the coldest place on earth, and it's just nuts. Anyway, one of the guys on there last night, they were talking because they had like an experienced miner who's been doing it like for years and years and years, and they had a guy who's literally just started, yeah. And they were talking about it, and they were saying the experienced miner said one of the most important things to remember is that when you're doing well and when you're digging out loads of gold and when the gold price is high and when the oil price is low, that is the time to be worried because it ain't going to continue like that. It's going to change and you've got to be ready and you've got to be on the ball and sharp and looking at every bit of your operation, making sure your costs are low, making you're doing everything as efficiently as possible. And I thought that was such an... I thought I could relate that to investing so much that you know what it's like when we all get cocky and we're all doing well, that's when things go bad.
We've had that conversation so many times as well, Pete. This is it. You've got to almost be, you know, not blasé about it, but you've got to take we've said it before, the rough with the smooth. You've just got to be relaxed and not get overexcited. And we've spoken about the fact that each time that you've said that in the past, like, woohoo, I'm happy, I'm doing very well, rubbing your hands together, that's usually the time you should take some off the table. And I'm not saying Absolutely. That's what we should all do, but you've got to make sure that things don't... When you're rejoicing about a stock, sometimes it means that it's actually exceeded your target. So take some off the table. There's nothing wrong with trimming a little bit off the table, you know what I mean, and prepare for a little bit of a downside. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
Right, Pete, I'm gonna the experiment that I was doing, about stocks and talking about them, saying new holding on Twitter, doing a timestamp, but not saying the actual name of the stock.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I have a third one, which I want to talk about now.
Yeah.
Right. So this stock I purchased on the 8th of July. It's timestamped on Twitter. At the time I wrote, today I opened a position in the co whereby I'm effectively buying £1 coins for less than 20 pence.
Yeah. Right?
That was my sort of assessment as to how lowly valued this particular stock was. Okay. And at the time, I was purchasing this stock for just over 85 pence on the 8th of July, and I added more of this stock on the 20th of August at just over 74.5 pence. And today I think it finished at £1.78. Okay, so that's essentially 4.5 months of holding that stock. And this goes back to me saying and always doing, looking for stocks, but also, Pete, looking for stocks which are off the radar, not being spoken by anybody, not being ramped by anybody, not even being talked about in a sense of it's just a pile of poo stock.
Yeah.
Nobody wants it. So I'm holding my nose, I'm doing the research and all the rest of it. And essentially, Pete, what I found was a stock that was at a turnover in 2019 of 339 million, right?
Yeah.
Operating profit of 93 million. Net profit of 37 million, right? IPO'd in 2013 at £2.05, right?
Yeah.
Valued at 358 million, right? At an all-time high of £4.65 in July 2017. In March, right, it hit 60 pence because of the sector it was in.
Yeah.
The stock I'm talking about is Arrow Global Group, ticker ARW. What does it do? Another one of these stocks which... ethically, I shouldn't be buying, right?
It buys debt, doesn't it, or something?
It buys debts, yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically a leading debt purchaser, purchases customer accounts from a range of businesses, including retail banks, credit cards companies, telecommunications companies, and others. And essentially, puts together affordable repayment packages and plans for the people that are indebted or have got themselves in difficulty.
Well, that's actually quite
does,
a good company.
It does other bits than that, and it's got a massive data. The bit that attracted me was it's got a massive data hoard of information, and that's what got me in the stock. So it's come out with some news today, which has been absolutely phenomenal, which is why the market has popped. So that's what's happened. So today it came out with 9 months results, which were reasonable. Discrete profits and tax up 15%. Balance sheet collection was slightly down.
That's interesting because I've known about ARW for years, but for me personally, with my sort of like risk level and whatever, it's never thing that's really grabbed me because I've always thought, Christ, that is a risky company. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's held me back from it. It's like a psychological bias has held me back. But that's because I think I'm probably a lower risk investor than you are. And I think for that reason, I probably wouldn't myself get that excited about ARW, but it's obviously paid off brilliantly.
It's a risk. It still remains a risky stock, Pete.
Yeah.
The trading update, I think, surprised people in the sense of what was going on with the stock. Yeah. It's still not back to where it should be. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was up 10% today to 178. You know, and I've purchased at 85 and 74.5. You know, and this was the stock was so basically, Pete, you go back to the 21st of February. Yeah. It's essentially £3 a stock.
Mm.
Right. You move forward. Right. 1 month later, the 23rd of March, it's 60 pence.
Wow.
So I'm watching it and watching it and watching it, thinking, all right, okay, I've done my research, I've watched this, I've watched that. Nobody's talking about it. No one's interested in it. It's in a sector which everyone's going, you know what? Everyone's out of work. No one's getting paid. All the shops are shut. Yeah. Who's going to pay back the loans?
That's exactly so
everything that could be aligned against this company is against this company. So it goes down to 60 pence. And I'm buying it at 85 and 74.5.
Interesting thing I would say about ARW is that before it listed, and since that, it actually, I think, has been seen as a pretty good company. So that, in a way, reduces the risk considerably. The fact that it's got a good track record of doing what it does. They're not idiots.
Absolutely. It was profitable, Pete, and paying a divvy. So I was buying it at, let's use the higher figure of 85, right? 85 pence in July, and in 2019 it paid a divvy of 13 pence, Pete. Now if they can come back at any point and pay even half of that, let's say 6 pence, right, less than half of that, you know, at 85 pence, that's a nice chunky yield for me.
That's awesome, so these
are all the things that people say, well, how did you find this and how did you find that? I'm always looking for something that no one else wants. I'm the scrap man. You know what I mean? I don't care if no one... I prefer if no one's talking about it. If everyone's talking about it on Twitter, if everyone's ramping the stock, I'm not interested.
You're the trash into treasure, man.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mate, we're reasonably tight on time and we've got a few things to cover. So what I wanted to just do was mention a couple of stocks that I've seen in the last couple of days. I don't hold any of these, but I've had good trading updates and could be interesting. So Wednesday...
Pete, before you do that, can I ask you to talk about the thing that Matt spoke to us about first?
Don't
miss it at the very end, please.
Yeah, good point, yeah. What it is, you probably heard, we're sponsored by SharePad, to do these podcasts. And they're doing a special offer, but it's for ShearPad Pro, which is the sort of highest level version of ShearPad. But you basically get all of the ShearPad amazing features like the portfolio management and the screening and all sorts of stuff. The stuff that I use every day and Peter use every day. And they're doing this, but you get level 2 with it, okay? So you get level 2 and the reliability of level 2, etc., and live prices. And it's normally £69 per month. And they're doing an offer where you get 3 months for the price of one. Yeah, so you save £138 doing that. If you want to do it, you go on to the ShearPad website. Just click on their thing and find ShearPad pro that you want and go through to order it, whatever. And it's got a little box called promo code. And if you type in there, Twin Peaks BF, it's Twin Peaks Black Friday, basically. So it's all lowercase, Twin Peaks BF. And that will then get you that deal.
I mean, essentially what's happened, Pete, is that a lot of people have been having difficulties with various platforms over the past couple of weeks. You know, that we've had those big surges in the markets and huge movements in volume. Some people have not been getting access to their accounts or what the movements are or what the real prices are. And consistently, SharePad have been able to keep that integrity and that level two access to all of their clients. So that's why they're making this available, to make sure that people who have had difficulties, if they want to try something else, there's an availability to do so, and there's a discount for them as well.
Definitely. The other thing I want to mention quickly before I forget it, I want to do a call out to one of our listeners, great guy, and that's Andrew Smith, at Andrew Smith 259. Hello, buddy. Hope you're good. Right, what else was I going to say? Oh, yeah, right. I want to run through quickly some companies that I noticed that looked like could be interesting.
Go for it.
And the ones that stood out were Wynnstay, WYN. They're ahead of expectations today. They're like an agricultural feeds and agricultural equipment and whatever company. There's Cerillion, C-E-R. They're like telecoms billing and stuff. They won a contract today. I think that's an interesting little company. So people might want to have a look at that. I don't hold any of these. Another one that did well today is Begbie's Trainer, I think it's just called Begbie's now, isn't it? BEG, and that does like insolvency work and stuff, which is obviously a bit of a theme. Surprisingly, they said today that because of the government furlough schemes and things, there's not that much insolvency work around, which is sort of counterintuitive, really. But what they did say is that they're doing really well and they're actually taking market share. So that's a good thing. And the other one, obviously, everyone knows about Halfords HFD. I mean, that I was amazed at how they've gone from a huge net debt position to a nice net cash position. That's impressive. I was quite surprised by that.
I think lots of people have been taken aback by that. I think what's happened, Pete, is that with regards to they had that first sort of windfall regarding everyone having more time in their hands than they were buying bikes or getting their bike service. But I think also as well, the same people that have taken their bikes in there that are or have been using their cars prior to the lockdown were taking their cars to Halfords Auto Centres, Pete, and having their cars serviced as well. So they've had a bit of a fillip in a sense of a boost regarding revenues. But I think also, you know, given what was going on before for them, you were saying they're always cyclical, they're always up and they're always down. I think they've shed a lot of their problems they had before. Are you with me? They always had niggly things going on with the stock, and they seem to be sorting all of that out now. So I think they surprised a few people, and I think the likelihood is that momentum in that stock could carry on. You know, it
definitely
seems pretty solid right now to me. That stock does.
One of the things that was really interesting was that they're talking about recruiting loads of people to train them and stuff for electric vehicle technicians.
Well, they,
if you think about it, as more EVs get on the roads, which is obviously going to happen in the next few years, there's going to be a lot of servicing work, and you need to know what you're doing because they're a bit different. I mean, obviously, brakes and a lot of that, you know, a lot of it's the same.
Yeah,
but the actual engine wise and the electronics wise is completely different. So that's quite interesting.
The other part of that, Pete, still on the bikes bit for your Halfords thing, is that there's going to be more electric bikes out there as well.
Yeah.
And I say bikes, then cycling bikes, not electric motorbike bikes.
Yeah. Oh, and those.
And there will be those as well, no doubt.
And scooters, electric scooters.
Yeah. So that's an interesting bit, because what you had today was that big announcement from I nearly said the wrong name there, our Prime Minister.
Him.
Boris Johnson.
The bloke with the mad hair.
With regards to his Green Industrial Revolution deal.
And,
you know, he's going to be throwing lots of money at wind turbine, electric cars, going to cut out petrol-driven cars by 2030, I think it was the date he gave. So lots of that going on. So they would have got a bit of boost from that as well regarding bikes. Holford's would have done. So yeah, it's everything's pointing in the right direction for them.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think that's really the ones I just want to run through quick. Yeah, that'll cover those.
Okie dokie. I wanted to touch, Pete, on one stock that I got asked to have a look at, and I don't do this very often, in the sense of people saying, oh, can you have a look at this? And I go away and I use up my time over the weekend to have a quick look at stuff. Mm. And that stock was the old mining stock. You remember Hargreaves, Pete? Ticker symbol HSP.
Yeah, Hargreaves Services.
It's not called Hargreaves Services. Now they're getting rid of all their mining stuff. Yeah. So I what I tend to do when someone asks me to do this, I just tend to look at the bull and bear points of the stock.
Yeah.
So what are all the positives about this stock? You know, it's on its knees. It's a deep discount to its whole land bank and NAV and all the rest of it. So I look at the positives, then I look at the bull points, and then look at the bear points. So I'm just going to run through this very, very quickly, and then told you what I said. So I just ran through and I said, look, positives. They've got 15,000 acres of land bank, okay?
Yeah.
Significant. Dividend paying shares, which may stop and start, obviously. So it's getting out of the coal mining bit. It's got multiple income, streams at the minute, and trading at a huge discount to NAV. Because of the land bank, builders, supermarkets, logistics, warehousing companies could be a good source of JVs or buying of their land.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on what happens with HS2, that could add further value realization regarding the lands that they've got. Yeah, the land bank that they've got. Okay, yeah. So that's short and sweet. And then I ran over some bear points. In my view, HSP's CEO is vastly overpaid for the market cap of the company. Despite the dividend yield, HSP has returned a total annualized return of -7% over 10 years.
Yeah.
And -4.8% over 5 years. Because it's ex-coal mining land and blah, 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 a lot of it
is. Yeah, because it used to be UK coal, didn't it? UKC,
That's correct, Pete.
Yeah.
Because of that land bank being a lot of mining land bank, not just, you know, the houses around the landmines, right? Or the land around the landmines. A lot of that needs remediation. So a lot of that soil has got to be sorted out to be able to be livable on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that could take a long time, yeah?
That's brownfield, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. The discount to NAV could stay wide for a while. It's been long for a while. It could persist. For me, and this is always about, if the stock is down 50% or 40% or 60%, why has neither the CEO or any director bought shares year to date? Why should I buy shares if the board aren't willing to buy any shares? So that's a bear point for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, the coal revenue is going to go offline soon. Yeah.
There can't be much coal left.
Yeah, well, yeah. But therefore, they've become over-reliant on the other services and realisation of the land. So it could take a while.
Yeah.
So overall, I just felt it was one of them that, you know, I wouldn't go at right now. But it could switch overnight, Pete, because sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds and deep-pocketed entities could just go in any minute and buy a big stake in the company or do a JV, and you're on the way there from £2 up to £3 and higher.
Yeah.
So that was the quick overview of HSP. Well, something for people,
mate,
to go and research.
As we were talking, I just quickly looked at the chart on my ADVFN app, and it just strikes me it's in a lovely sideways range, very tight sideways range. The beauty of that kind of situation is that if it breaks out cleanly above £2.40, that'd be a massive buy signal. And you could probably pick it up at £2.50, £2.55. And get a lot of upside, I would think.
Yeah, it just needs some news, Pete, and some love. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At some point, at the moment,
we all need a bit of love.
at the moment, it's not for me, but it's got. If you look at the majority shareholders, the shareholders, quite a few people in that particular stock that are in that stock and like that stock. So, you know, there's no fools out there. You know what I mean? So, you know, for them to be in there, that's a good thing.
I think from memory, Investors Chronicle have been tipping that. They like it. They've been on about for a while. And to be honest, I think they were right for the last 4 or 5 years or whatever on it. And I think it did pretty well for much of that time. But obviously with COVID, it just got obliterated like everything else did.
Yeah. So that was just one that I wanted to share in the sense I've
That's
already
interesting, yeah.
looked at it. I'll talk about another one that someone asked me to speak about another time.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's essentially what I had to cover today, Pete. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Well, I think we need to close it off because we've been gabbling on
Yeah,
for an hour, so.
an hour and 4 minutes in there. I mean,
Yeah.
ladies and gents, I want to thank you all once again. We've had phenomenal feedback from everyone. There were some people talking about Pete's metaphors that he uses, and I honestly don't know where he comes with them.
Like
All
zoological terms.
yeah, you know, the
Yeah.
kangaroo one the last time was my favourite, in the
Yeah,
sense of, you know, people in Australia, they need broadband because they don't want to stare at kangaroos all the time. I thought that was absolutely brilliant. But yeah, so thank you all for your feedback. As always, with all the feedback that I see and Pete sees, I tend to try and cluster them and write them up in the article accompanying the following podcast write-up. So the people that have commented on Twin Peaks 35, there'll be a write-up in the article on which Pete will have a link to on his website and will be on the Conkers 3 website as well. So thank you for that. And other than that, it's just a case of, you know, please take care of yourself. Please stay safe. Please look out for your neighbours, friends, and extended family. I want to say a big thank you for all those people that have supported Pete and I and given us the feedback, but also those that have told us that they've made a generous donation to the Memphis charity, which is what we're supporting right now up until Christmas, so
Oh,
we can
thank you for that. Yeah,
gifts
brilliant.
to the young people and some of their carers and family. So this is what it's about. We try to give as much as we can to the investing community. We don't ask for anything, you know, other than feedback and for you to subscribe. You know, so, you know, we're on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google, you know,
Audio Boom,
Audio Boom,
Overcast,
Overcast, and all the rest of it. So if you're
loads.
listening to this for the first time or the 10th time and you haven't subscribed yet, please subscribe. That's all we're asking for you to do, so you can get first dibs when these come out. And if you're enjoying it, just give us some feedback and just tell us what you like about it. And if you don't like it and you've something we've said or something you don't like, share that with us too, so we can improve this podcast for you.
Absolutely. Definitely. Cool.
Okay, all right then, ladies and gents, that's it for me and Pete. You can find Pete at Wheelie Dealer on Twitter and myself at Conkers 3 on Twitter. That is a wrap for Twin Peaks Podcast 36. We will look forward to speaking with you, ladies and gents, in 2 weeks' time. Until then, take care and God bless you.
See you later. Thanks.
Bye bye, all.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast was brought to you in association with Sharepad from Sharescope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit sharescope.co.uk and discover the advantage.